Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday with Fred Williams, webmaster for Creation Research Society. Fred, how are you?
Very good, Bob.
You did a couple seminars in Highlands Ranch over the last few weeks.
I did.
They went pretty well. I heard about 80 people in attendance for each.
Yeah, I think for each there seemed like between 75 and 100, actually.
Oh,
so
fabulous.
Good turnout at both of them.
Mm-hmm.
First one, we covered mostly dinosaurs. It was more family-oriented talk where that, you know, kids could come and hopefully not fall asleep.
Right.
So it went really well. We kept them entertained with some information on dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, one of the most fantastic discoveries we've had in the last 10 years was this discovering blood cells in a dinosaur bone. And I used to use that in my talks, and the evolutionists would argue that, well, there's a strange fossilization process that made it look like blood cells. Well, then something happened a couple of years ago, Bob, that we've talked about a lot on the show, where they found T-Rex bones that actually had soft tissue, tendons.
Mm-hmm.
And
Montana State University.
That's right. And what a wonderful creation evangelism tool to use, because mm-hmm. everybody's fascinated by dinosaurs, not just kids. Even adults will ask, well, if you know the Earth is really only 6,000 years old, and how do you explain the dinosaurs? I mean, I get that a lot from adults.
Mm-hmm.
And what a great tool dinosaurs can be to evangelize to even adults. Where I used to work at McData Corporation, I had a friend of mine asked that very question. And you can go online and do a search on T-Rex blood vessels, and it'll show pictures of this basically unfossilized T-Rex bone. And it's just powerful evidence that dinosaurs did not live millions of years ago. They couldn't possibly.
65 million years ago, then hang around in that sandstone or whatever they're buried in up in Hell Creek and Montana and South Carolina.
Yeah, exactly.
In South Dakota. I mean, come on.
Yeah, so there's no way that
they will believe anything, evolutionists.
Oh, they will.
That the soft tissue in the T-Rex stayed for 65 million years. It didn't decay. I mean, biological molecules will decay, and they decay rapidly. And over 65 million years not dehydrating?
And the discoverer is an evolutionist herself, and she said it was just like looking at a slice out of a modern bone.
Mm-hmm.
And she admitted that the fossilization process doesn't proceed as we had expected.
Yeah, and even Jack Horner, who's the curator up at MSU's museum, and he was the expert on the set of all three Jurassic Park movies. You recall I had a phone conversation with him. Our church, Denver Bible Church, offered them a grant of, I think it was $23,000, to carbon 14 date that soft tissue T-Rex, and they refused.
Yeah, he was kind of in a catch-22, huh, Bob?
Yeah, he was, and anyway, they refused, and I don't know if you and I have ever played that call. Maybe we'll do that on the next Real Science Friday show we do.
Yeah, that'd be good.
We should play that call. It's only about a six-minute call or so. But they didn't want anything to do with carbon 14 dating that thing, because there should be no carbon 14 in it. And of course, we know and they know they'll find carbon 14 in it. So they don't want to do it, because carbon 14, as we discussed on the last episode, it's gone after 50,000 years or so. And it doesn't last for millions of years, not 1 million, let alone 65 million years.
That's right. So if he accepts the challenge and dates it, he knows that they'll find carbon 14, and it'll show that it's really not that old. And if he refuses, and we've kind of got him too, because it's kind of an admission that, hey, I know there's going to be carbon 14 in there, and I don't want to date it because my mind's made up despite the evidence.
Right, exactly. So, but you did the two seminars.
They went well. The dinosaur one too, we talked about how, you know, people will ask, well, what about dinosaurs in the Bible? I'm reviewing a book right now, and the very first question is, who do I choose between, dinosaurs or God? Well, people don't understand what people need to realize is dinosaurs are mentioned in the Bible, mm-hmm. but the word dinosaur, you won't find the word dinosaur in the Bible because that word wasn't invented until the 1800s. Mm-hmm. So just like you won't find the word email, internet, are you going to find those words in the Bible, Bob?
No.
Okay. Right. Well, you're not going to find the word dinosaur, but you will find descriptions of dinosaurs.
You don't find the word Bible in the Bible.
That's right.
Right? Some of these words we come up with later, but you find descriptions of dinosaurs in the Bible.
That's right. Very clear descriptions. One example is the Leviathan, mm-hmm. and another one is the Behemoth that has a tail of a cedar tree is one example of a description given of this dinosaur. Well, at the time they translated the Bible into the King James from the Received Text, the dinosaurs were probably extinct by then or nearly extinct, so they really didn't know what it was describing, so they said a hippopotamus or an elephant. Mm-hmm. Well, Bob, have you ever seen the tail of an elephant before?
It looks like a tree. No, it looks like a string.
Maybe a piece of a willow tree.
Right.
So, yeah, right. And so it's not the shape of a cedar tree. So there's different examples we could give. It was the seminar again went very well. Mm-hmm. And then the next week we covered more of a technical class, even though I really try to gear them to layman as well. And so we covered the illusions behind evolution, all the arguments that they use and what's wrong with them and what appears in the textbooks as opposed to what they're really finding scientifically. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. And I know that you told me that someone came up to you and didn't really agree with your presentation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. The church that hosted this did a very good job of marketing it to the public. So we knew we were going to have some people there that weren't, being preached, preaching to the choir kind of mm-hmm. people. So
right. This
person turned out to be an atheist. He came up later and said that, he was being gracious. He said he appreciated the talk. And he said that he was offended by me talking about the ravishes of evolutionary worldview, such as, communism and things that happened in the 20th century where guys like Stalin were avid believers in evolution, and it permeated their worldview,
yeah.
And we saw what the results were. There's
Mao,
consequences.
Hitler,
yeah, Mao Zedong is
Columbine
believed
murderers.
To be. Exactly. There's
right.
a consequence to a worldview. And so I went through some of those examples, and he said that he didn't think that was appropriate for this talk. It's offensive to him. And I'm like, well, these are facts. This is reality, and we need to know what the consequences are of a worldview.
Yeah, it's reasonable to say that Christians pulled off the Crusades, and to the extent that they were unjust, I have a gripe against those Christians who did that, and what was their argument or justification. And then we look into it, and we see that injustice in the name of Christ is condemned by the teachings of Christ.
Yeah, and I guarantee
by the teachings of Christ, we could condemn those who use his name to harm others.
And I can guarantee you that this person was being hypocritical, because I guarantee you in his past he's used that argument about the Crusades
right.
and the Inquisition.
Yeah.
Evolutionists love to bring those up. And,
but could we do that, Fred, with Mao or Hitler or Stalin? Could we take the teachings of evolution and condemn them for killing the weaker organisms?
No, you
them?
Can't. You can, if anything, take it and promote that view.
Right.
They were following their worldview.
Survival of the fittest, the strong.
Yeah, Lenin.
Destroy and consume the weaker.
That's right. And Lenin was another one who was an avid believer in evolution. And you read his biographies, and people claim that he was a very gracious, very kind, very nice person. Well, this atheist happened to mention that something that we hear often about how he really shouldn't be, condemned because he does good things. He's a nice person. He treats people well. Mm-hmm. Well, I saw this as an opportunity that a lot of people, they hear this, that are hearing this creation evolution argument, they need another element, and that's the law. There's a proverb that says the law is perfect for converting the soul. Mm. So I told him, I said, I don't think Satan's biggest lie is evolution. I think Satan's biggest lie is that being good, in quotes, gets you to heaven. And he's like, he went on again about how good he is. And I asked him, well, what's your position on abortion? And boy, all of a sudden, that change of
Whoa,
color in his face.
Okay. Let me follow this now. He's saying, basically, I'm good enough to get to heaven.
That's
and,
right.
And you point out that that's a bigger lie even than evolution. And So he said, well, I'm a good person. And you asked him, okay, how about killing children, babies, innocent children? What's your position on that? You just picked that out of a thousand possible issues.
Yeah. And yeah, so I asked him, what's your position on abortion? And he said, well, that's a difficult topic and that has different. I'm like, it's really not that difficult. It boils down to, then I got more, a little bit more detailed and said, you know, this involves killing innocent babies that are defenseless in the womb. These are babies. These aren't pieces of tissue. We know that scientifically. You claim as an evolutionist that you respect and love science. Well, we know scientifically now there's no excuse to claim that these are just pieces
they're
of
not,
tissue.
Right.
This is a living human being with all the chromosomes that we have.
Right.
They dream. They do all these things. And he's like, well, he was kind of started stammering. Mm. And
so his conscience told him, because you got him off guard, that it's wrong to kill a baby. So his conscience was gnawing on him in that direction. And here he is saying, I'm good enough to get to heaven. And you pull one example out of a thousand. Okay, how about killing babies? Oh, well, I sort of support that.
Yeah, in so many words, that's what he was admitting. And, you know, I guess I pray that at least there was a seed planted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's great to talk about creation and evolution, because today's society is like the Greeks of Jesus' time. Jesus is foolishness to them. It's a stumbling block to the Jews, because the Jews already believed in a creator God. But the Greeks didn't believe in God at all, so Jesus and the cross was foolishness to them. So Paul changed his tactics in Acts 17 and started talking about the creator God. And then he was able to start reaching people. And so we need to do that to reach to this world, but we can't forget that occasionally, if not, you know, all the time, is apply also some law, because, again,
the law leads men to Christ.
That's right.
The law leads men to Christ.
It's perfect for converting the soul.
That's from the Old Testament. You're quoting the Psalms. It's from the New Testament, the Gospels and Galatians chapter 3 and so on. God gave the law to show men that they are sinful. He gave the law to make sin exceedingly wicked, so we would see that we need a Savior and then trust in Christ. It's hard to preach salvation apart from the law. God meant it to be done with the law. So great job.
Yeah, and what's neat about creation evangelism is, you know, Bob, I'm not one of the best in the world at just preaching the cross, you know, about Jesus loves you. You know, sometimes that Jesus loves you doesn't get through to these Greeks, so to speak, because, again, they don't believe in a creator God. But creation evangelism is great because it's so easy to talk about, and people love to talk about origins.
Mm-hmm.
You can get into conversations with anybody on this topic, whereas if you start trying to talk to an unbeliever about Jesus and this and that, they roll their eyes. And
yeah, in this case, the atheist came to you, and then after the seminar, he came to you personally, and, hey, I'm good enough to get to heaven. Okay, let's talk about that. How good are you really?
Exactly.
And God said, you know, don't lie, basically, to paraphrase. Don't lie. You tell a lie? Oh, you have. Don't steal. Have you ever stole? Well, if you say no, you already admit it, you're a liar.
Yeah.
But how about don't commit adultery? And Jesus said, if you lust in your heart, you're guilty of adultery, because given the time and opportunity, you'd commit it if you're lusting. And how about don't murder? Oh, I'm not a murderer, except for innocent children. I'd kill them given the opportunity. So you very quickly, using God's law, show that this person is in desperate need of forgiveness by God.
That's right.
And Fred, tonight, what an honor that Judy Brown is right now in Colorado, and she is speaking at the fundraiser at Sinzetti's. It's going to be a fabulous Italian meal. Tonight, it's April 4th, Friday night at 7 o'clock at I-25 and 104th. The event is sponsored by Colorado Right to Life, and it's for, the proceeds go to the campaign to get personhood on the ballot in November. And we are getting so close to the 76,000 signatures we need. And this event can help us in a big way. So please, it's not too late. Call us before we leave here, before we leave the studio today. Call us at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. It's expensive. Fred, what do you think? For a good meal, $100 a plate.
For a good meal?
Yeah. That's expensive,
that's
right?
That's expensive, but that's also a really good time.
It's a really good time, and the money goes to help teach people like this atheist that we are made in God's image. The unborn child is a person. A person is a person, no matter how small. And think of all the kids eventually we'll be able to save. We might have to go through this five times to get this on the ballot and educate the people of Colorado time and again, just like people had to be educated all around the world about slavery and injustice and racism and so on. This is a matter of educating people of the personhood of the unborn child.
And how can people help, Bob? Can they, you know, they can call in and donate money? Can they also get a packet maybe that has
That's right. The petitions that you could get a petition if you call us, or you could call Colorado Right to Life. I'll give both phone numbers. Colorado Right to Life, they're a distribution center for the petitions. They've been involved in getting thousands of signatures in. Their phone number in the Denver area is 303-753-9394, 303-753-9394. Now, it's getting late to come to this event tonight at 7 o'clock. I don't know if you could risk just showing up and seeing if there's an extra seat. There might be. There's limited seating, but you could try calling us also right here at Bob and Yurt Live, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278. And Fred, you know what else we've been doing? I'm here with Fred Williams, webmaster for Creation Research Society, and we've been offering a publication from a different organization, but there are a lot of really great creationist groups, and this is out of Australia. It's Creation Magazine, and for people who want to support Bob and Yurt Live, they can call us, and if they buy the science pack for $100 or a gift to Bob and Yurt Live or $100, or how about this, if they subscribe to any of our offerings, our monthly Bible study album, our monthly video, our Bob and Yurt Live BEL Classics, the old TV show is back on DVD. You used to see that show, right?
Oh, Greg? They were awesome.
So much fun. Our Bob and Yurt Live sermons, if you subscribe to any of these, we'll give you as a gift a subscription to Creation Magazine that you'll absolutely love. We get it at our home. And my 10-year-old son, Zachary, he's the first to open it up out of the envelope and grab it. And he is quite the reader.
It's a very nice publication. It has a section for kids. Mm-hmm. And it's just very well written to both the layman and the more scientific inclined. So highly recommend it. And again, it's a great evangelism tool, too. You can leave it at your dentist office when you're done reading it or take it on an airplane with you. It's amazing the conversations you can get into.
It really is great. Now, Fred, could we talk about the skunk cabbage? And I think that'll about end our discussion of the 2007 fall edition of Creation Research Society Quarterly. But what's with the skunk cabbage? That's more evidence of design by our creator God.
Well, it has to do with a process called homeostasis. And what's real interesting about it, about the skunk cabbage, is it has the ability to elevate its temperature by about 77 degrees.
77 degrees? Fred, you got to be kidding me. It could elevate its temperature 77 degrees above the environmental temperature? That just blows my mind.
It's kind of neat. It'll melt the surround with their snow. It'll melt the surrounding snow around it. So it's protection against freezing. It's just a very elaborate design.
Because this plant, you know, a cabbage can smell bad enough. I wonder what a skunk cabbage smells like. This must be really a winner here. But it's able to heat up its environment by 77 degrees. I'd say we should pull these things out to try to stop global warming.
There you go. That's probably, I think we've come up with a cause of global warming. After all, it isn't the soccer moms and the SUVs.
It's a skunk cabbage.
It's a skunk cabbage.
Yeah, and birds and mammals, many of them could stay warm when it's freezing outside. Here's an example of a plant that could heat things up 77 degrees above the environmental temperature. And this is an example of God designing this so that these creatures can survive even if man sinned, and man's sin results in Noah's flood and the world becomes a somewhat hostile environment. There's still hundreds of thousands of species that will be able to survive in very difficult climates.
That's right. And, you know, homeostasis is just a really neat process that helps us regulate the temperature of our bodies. You know, just think about in the wintertime when the temperature, you're used to temperatures in the 30s, and say you have a, you know, one of these Indian summer days and it's all of a sudden 65. Well, Bob, that feels real warm to us. We go outside and sometimes we'll even put our shorts on. I mean, it's we feel very comfortable. But in the summer when it's like 90 degrees all the time, and then suddenly you have this storm move in and it's 65 degrees, I mean, we're shivering and we're cold.
Right.
And it's all part of this homeostasis process where our body regulates itself and really adapts, too, to the conditions that we're in.
You know, if we could get our minds around that, it's like in the summertime, we set the air conditioning so cold that it's freezing. If it was that cold in the wintertime, we'd be complaining. And in the wintertime, we put up like 72, 73. And boy, if we can only somehow overcome that
psychosomatically. We could put XL out of business.
Yeah,
huh?
That's right. We could, again, solve global warming with the skunk cabbage and just getting our minds around that. But this homeostasis in our bodies, human bodies, being able to regulate the temperature to such an awesome degree. You know, for the body to regulate the temperature, it has to know what temperature it is.
Yeah, so there's sensors all throughout the body. How many do you think there are, Bob?
There are thermometers. There are thousands of thermometers around your body that are constantly sending back telemetry to your brain to let you know what the temperature is. And when it finds that the temperature is a little too hot or a little too cool, it has these wildly sophisticated mechanisms to operate this homeostasis to keep you at your 98.6 in the most difficult surroundings.
And Bob, what do we do when it's really hot out? We tend to
sweat.
We sweat. And so that's one mechanism. And, you know, so behaviorally, what happens is we seek shade. It's like, you know, we'll try to find something where it's not quite so hot. And what also happens is blood will circulate to our exterior. And
yeah,
that'll help expel some of the heat.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what happens when it's cold? What does the blood do?
The blood will stay in our core and to our head. And then that's why you get frostbite. Because your body knows to shut down the problems with heat loss. And so it's willing to sacrifice your fingers and your toes to keep your heart pumping blood to your brain.
That's right.
Yeah, that is just awesome.
It's amazing. And this is just one of, you know, really thousands of processes that we could talk about. It's amazingly
and
complex.
And even sweating, of course, causes evaporation, which is one of the most extraordinary ways to transfer heat, to cool something down.
Cools the person or the animal, this sweating and evaporation.
And then if you're caught out in a survival situation and it's too hot, you're in the Sonoran Desert, your body starts sweating, but then it realizes that this is not working. We're going to dehydrate. It will shut down the sweating, so you will not sweat at all. And it's just the complexity, and we're just barely describing it, like a child trying to describe, you know, a 747.
Skunk cabbage.
Yeah, right. But it is so wildly complex, and for the efficient use of energy in all of these systems to happen by random mutation. And oh yeah, we'll select that. Now that's a better way to keep the body at the right temperature. It's just ludicrous, but that's the evolution fairy tale. That in fact there's a great website, evolutionfairytale.com, right?
That's right.
Is it a good website or am I making that
up? I'm biased because Bob's bringing that up because that's my website.
That's your website. That's right, evolutionfairytale.com. And that is a really great website, Fred. Good job with that. Okay, so last thing now with this 2007 edition, they talk about fossil insects, Fred, on page 159. And once again, this comes right out of New Scientist, which is an evolutionary publication. New Scientist, they found an insect so far back in the fossil record, but it had jaws, and the jaws had joints, mandibles. It's very sophisticated. And they said that this insect can do one other thing.
Well, they figured it could fly.
It could fly.
Because it matched what we see in insects today that can fly. Yet this was found 80 million years earlier than they expected in their paradigm.
80 million years Before. So before flight evolved, they find an insect fossil with flight.
Yeah, it has all the hallmarks of a true insect. And a true insect. It didn't change one iota, insect. Really. So that's another problem for evolutionists. It's called stasis, how we find things in the fossil record that over time, they don't change. If anything, they de-evolve. You know, we find huge crocodiles in the fossil record, for example, huge dragonflies, and they just don't get as big as that today. But they guess what? They're still the same animal. They have same features.
There was giantism back in the fossil record commonly, even with ferns and plants and animals. And so they've gotten smaller since the flood, but they're the same.
They're the same. You know, we find fossilized bats. All the time you'll come across articles about, you know, creatures that they'll say, wow, this thing, it looks just like a modern bat. Well, you know, isn't that an expectation of creation and not evolution?
Right.
To find this, you know, stasis.
And they'll say, it's almost identical to a modern bat. And they'll say, well, how is it different? Well, it's not really different. So it is identical to a modern bat.
Well, they'll use words like primitive. They'll try to give it the illusion of evolution by using these code words and try to, you know, trick you, your mind into thinking that it's evolved. You know, I have a quote from one evolutionist who is, you know, on this topic was being intellectually honest. And he wrote that the observation that species are amazingly conservative and static entities throughout the long periods of time has all the qualities of the emperor's new clothes. Everyone knew it, but preferred to ignore it. Paleontologists faced with a recalcitrant record obstinately refused to yield to Darwin's predicted pattern and simply looked the other way. So in other words, the facts didn't match their paradigm, so
right.
They
Who
ignored it.
Who said that, Fred? That's an
that
interesting
was,
quote.
Miles Eldridge said that.
Miles Eldridge, and who was a world
he's an evolutionist.
Evolutionist.
Yeah, and he believes in punctuated equilibrium, that basically life evolved in small populations rapidly. And that's why you can't find them in the fossil record. It's really
right.
Silly.
So there's an admission by quite a few evolutionists that the fossil record does not show a gradual transition from invertebrate to vertebrate, non-flight to flight, and apes
That's
to
right.
humans, and little horses, Eohippus up to Equus. These things are not in the fossil record. And the whole thing about the horses, in fact, the only place you find that is in the textbooks. You get evolutionists to admit this stuff.
That's right.
And the number of ribs in those horses jump back and forth. They're not evolving. They're different species.
Yeah, one evolutionist admitted that it was lamentable that this stuff's in the textbooks.
All right. Hey, Fred Williams, thank you for another episode of Real Science Friday. That was great. Maranatha Christian Center. Freddie, you give them a plug with me. Good
oh, sure. It's
Nevada.
A great school. My kids, Ryan and Abby, go to that school,
Maranatha
and there
Christian Center.
You'll learn real science.
Right. May God bless you all.
Hi, I'm Bob's brother, Brian. I moved my remodeling business, Fancy Schmancy Renovations, to Colorado. You can call me to improve the look and value of your home and support Bob Enyart Live at the same time. I have nearly 30 years' experience beautifying homes. So whether you're in the market for a new kitchen, a bathroom makeover, or maybe a new front door, you'll be pleased with the results and happy to know that all the proceeds will go directly toward keeping Bob on the air with the truth. Yes, I said, well, wait a second. That's 5% of the proceeds. That's not, I said 5% of the proceeds, Bob, not all. Anyhow, so call for a free estimate to see if we can help you with your next home improvement project. And don't forget to mention that you heard about us on Bob Enyart Live. Call us, Fancy Schmancy Renovations, at 720-641-7033. That's 720-641-7033.